Welcome back to the No Name Football Podcast. I'm here as usual with the wrestling champ, the weightlifting champ from Florida, Florida Offensive Player of the Year, Temple Team Captain, Temple Tough. He wants Todd Bowles hired already as head coach of Chicago Bears. He wants all those Temple guys in the building so they could go out, talk about how great they all were at Temple. But I'm here, of course, with my podcast partner, Jason McKee. J-Mac, what's up,
man? What's going on, brother? Oh, man, you talk about all that stuff, and it's like as you get older, you forget about all the stuff that you gone through. Like, I forgot like that. Hey, I did that. I did that.
You want to know why you forget? Nobody cares.
Nobody cares about what you did.
At all. You know, I'll have a few beers or something at home, and I'll get rolling on how great I was. And my kids, man, you can see their eyes. Yeah. They roll. Everybody's trying to bail and leave the table. Dad, can we? No. I'm not done telling you everything I accomplished.
We have my younger son, Jordan, so he's a freshman now over at Carmel, playing football and everything. So I tell him, I was like, hey, man. I'm like, Dad used to be so strong. He just rolls his eyes at me. I'm like, you little punk. You little punk. It doesn't even resonate. He doesn't even care, brother.
I talk about my bench. I used to, at UW, they used to give out a gold 500 club t-shirt for a 500-pound bench.
Oh, wow.
And I always tell him, like, I wish it. I think my wife threw away that t-shirt, Jay, man. That's why I couldn't wear it around the house anymore. But I'm like you. I'm always throwing numbers out. I may embellish a little bit here and there, 10 or 20 pounds. I mean, put 10 or 20 pounds on my max, but just like you, man, my kids are like, oh boy, here we go again. Yeah. I wanted to talk to you about that Green Bay game first. We haven't got a chance to go over it yet. Bears go up there, look pretty good in the first half, right?
Yeah.
Play good defense early on. Put the ball in the end zone. Had some big plays. Yeah. 88 out the gate.
Yeah, explosive.
As Alex Brown would say on the NBC after show. But what did you see from that game when you watched it? Obviously, in the second half, didn't go very well. Bears end up losing that game by a pretty big margin to the Green Bay Packers. But what did you see?
Yeah, I saw, you know, coming out, you know, we got the explosive plays that we haven't had all year. You know, obviously, you get the special team score, a punt return, which I don't know when the last time we had a punt return, probably when Mr. Hester was here. I'm not sure.
I think they said that was the first one in the NFL this year.
Yeah. So, I mean, it was a great play by Jakeem Grant. And then you get another explosive play by Demir Byrd, in which I thought that play was creative. You put Demir Byrd in the backfield. You put him out there on a nickel linebacker. He's out there one-on-one coverage. He runs the option route. And, you know, he makes a good catch and takes the distance. So you got some points on the board, explosive plays. But what we failed to see was, obviously, the second half, the adjustments, there wasn't any. Offensively, we still cannot sustain a drive. If you take away those two explosive plays, you know, we're still at, what, below our average of 16 points a game that it was before this Green Bay game. Justin Fields, I'll start with him. I think he did some good things like we've seen all year. He did some good things, but, you know, there's still a learning curve that he has to overcome. Obviously, with the turnover, he's got to do a better job of taking care of the ball. But it goes back to game planning, you know, putting your guys in situation to be successful. And we still haven't seen that. And, brother, I love it when you say that, you know, our offensive coaches in that building, they design plays based upon like a 7-on-7 scheme. Mm-hmm. They don't think about the protection first. And it's me and you know, brother, you played online, me playing fullback. You know, everything starts with the protection. Because if you don't have no protection, you don't have a damn play. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we saw that them, you know, leaving Tevin Jenkins on an island. You know, he comes in there, his first start, he's on the road in Lambeau Field filling in for Jason Peters, who hopefully will be okay to play here in the future. We don't know what his status is. You put him out there, and then, you know, he gets, what did he have? He had two holding penalties, two sacks. One was a strip sack, two false start penalties against a good pass rusher in Preston Smith. So based upon your game plan, and like you said all year, brother, you've got to figure, hey, you know, we do have a left tackle that's pretty old. You know, Tevin Jenkins is the next man up. You know, what is our plan for if Tevin Jenkins gets in the game? Well, obviously, we see there wasn't one. And, you know, I know we have some clips from Laser as well. I know you're going to play that, but there is no plan. You know, obviously, you have high expectations for Tevin Jenkins, but how high are those expectations? Like, are you naive to the fact that this man has not had a lot of practice time. He's coming off an injury, and it's not making excuses. Those are facts. Mm-hmm. And so you're setting this kid up for failure in his first game. So I was pretty disturbed about that. Defensively, we know defensively, obviously, Jalen Johnson did a good job. You know, we still having trouble stopping the run, but we were out coached again in the second half. I mean, Matt LaFleur and that group did did a great job of making adjustments and putting the ball in Davante Adams' hands by any means necessary. So they couldn't get the ball in his hands consistently in the first half. What did they do? They went back to the drawing board. They designed some pick routes and some plays where they can get the ball in his hands, and we had no answer for it as usual.
Yeah, and they come out early, right, J-Mac, and you're watching the game, and always when you watch, I mean, you're happy with the punt return. You're happy with the Damir Bird explosive play there. Like you said, they ran that angle route out of the backfield. Yeah. I'm sure you had a pretty nice angle route over there at Temple.
Had a couple, man. A couple on Ed Reed, too.
Sell the flat.
Sell that flat. Snap your head around.
Wait, now.
Nobody cares.
Wait, now, did you just say you beat Ed Reed on
the angle route? I'm going to show you.
Okay.
I promise.
No, I want to see it.
Hey, but nobody cares.
No, I do. Hey, you beat Ed Reed. Everybody always cares.
I'm going to put it on there now.
Man, that's like when you see that, when you go back to, like I go back to Hawaii. And you see somebody from high school, and they're like, "Man, when I beat you in high school," you're like, yeah, "Get away from me, man!" And they did. I mean, everybody gets beat, right? But anyway, a few problems I have with the game when you're watching it early. Okay, you're waiting for them to run a good concept run. By that I mean, what are you as an offense, right? But mm-hmm. Early on, they go empty, which I don't agree with. Right? Justin Fields got hit, and people have talked about this all already. I think Brian Baldinger did a great thing on Twitter about it, and we're always kind of late with our podcast, but that's we do it on Thursday, so suck it up, guys. So anyway, but it's empty early, and, mm-hmm. and you know they get beat by TT inside, Sam Mustafa and James Daniels, and Fields gets hit, and the first thing you're thinking is, man, why would you go empty? You know, where your quarterback has crack rears, but it shows you how tough Justin Fields is, right? He scrambles for a first down. You know, no, they run Wildcat, which I know they like, but the problem for me with Wildcat is, J-Mac, they can take Montgomery away, and then you got to get the ball to Damon Williams. Yeah. I want the ball in Montgomery's hands, right? And then the first actual run play they run that's not some kind of trick play or, you know, is draw. And then you don't see a draw again. And I think they got like 20 yards.
Yeah,
on that
draw. It was a good draw.
Yeah, it was a good play, right? A good solid play out of doubles. A first time I seen the Bears really in doubles this year. So mm-hmm. Green Bay didn't do much film study because I would have been thinking, oh, they're going to run draw here. But anyway, that's my problem is like, okay, even Jakeem Grant's sweep, even though I like the play, I like the concept, I like the thought, give it to Khalil Herbert, right?
Yes.
All I'm saying is you're featuring Jakeem Grant. You're featuring Khalil Herbert. Mm. You're featuring Jimmy Graham. And my question is why? Why aren't you featuring David Montgomery, Allen Robinson, Darnell Mooney, Cole Kmet, Khalil Herbert?
You're featuring right. Allen Robinson with a curl route.
Yeah,
that's like your go-to.
Yeah, you see what I'm trying to say though, and I'm watching it and I'm thinking, okay, how much of this is sustainable, right? Through a whole game. So what is your plan? What have you set the foundation of the game where you can go, I'm going to go back to this. Mm-hmm. And all of a sudden the third quarter, now you want to run, you know, all of you going to run a play action and leave Tevin Jenkins one-on-one. First play, Tevin Jenkins comes in to the game. You leave him one-on-one. Mm-hmm. I just, when I'm watching the game, J-Mac, it baffles me. And then you get to the point of you're like, oh, man, the Bears are actually having a great game, but gosh, you're only up by 6 at halftime.
Right.
Right. That's when you're really worried. Like, that's as good as they can play. And they're only up by 6 because I didn't like, I don't know what you thought, but late in the, after I think it was after the Packers get the ball back late in the second quarter and that touchdown that he hit Davante Adams.
Yes.
Like, why did you change your defense up? Like, if you go soft, he's going to score anyway.
Yeah, and what they did was they made that adjustment. That was an adjustment that the Packers made right before halftime. All right? We know Jalen Johnson is shadowing Davante Adams. So what do? We're going to put Davante Adams in the slot, in which Jalen Johnson is now on the number one receiver who's outside. Now we got the matchup we want, which is Xavier Crawford's on Davante Adams. I think the number one receiver ran a post or a slant, and they ran that wheel route in behind with Davante Adams, who has Xavier Crawford covering him. Mm-hmm. And what's the result? Touchdown right before the half.
Yep.
You know what I'm saying? Yeah, like, it's just things like that, brother.
And then we get a field goal, and we go up by 6. But You get that punt return for a touchdown. Great play by Jakeem Grant. He had a great game. He's got to watch himself. That could end up being a really bad play there. Yes, obviously, yes. You know, that's one thing the Bears struggle with is seeing things before right. they happen. Like, that was a great game, but yeah, let's talk about what we should be doing here.
Right.
What actually makes sense, right? But like you're saying, Xavier Crawford obviously gets injured in the game. I think DeAndre Houston Carson also got injured in the game. All of a sudden, you see Eddie Jackson in the slot.
Yeah.
This defense is really depleted. I know there's no excuses in the NFL, and I know everybody likes to say that. But when Akeem Hicks is out, when Khalil Mack is out, when Eddie Goldman is not playing good football right now, Roquan Smith goes out with a hamstring, right?
Right.
DeAndre Houston Carson is out. Xavier Crawford is out already with a secondary that is not very good.
Yeah.
Right? So, and then you're playing against Hall of Famer Aaron Rodgers. Because early on, with all those guys in there, the coverage was good, right? I mean, obviously, Green Bay comes out. Here's how you know Green Bay had too much time in the bye week. They ran on inside the 10-yard. I think they ran like a fake shovel play-action pass trying to hit Devontae Adams. So what adjustment they made in the locker room? Ah, man, you know what? All that stuff we talked about in the bye week. Let's go back to power and play action.
Let's go to our identity. Right. Something that we've been saying.
So they every week. They run power, Bilal Nichols and Robert Quinn, right? That's really what they did. Just ran downhill at the Bears. That was their huge adjustment. Right. Our huge adjustment, we're going to run downhill. We're going to run power instead of dual and zone. We're going to probably get a double team. We'll get a back block, run a gap scheme. They started doing that to them. And the Bears couldn't hold up after a while. And then on offense, man, I mean, it just became like an avalanche because you don't ever really put in, like, I think the first play of the second half was a fake zone read option Fields and Jakeem Grant. What the hell are we doing? Right?
We're calling plays just to call plays.
And then you run a 7-step play action where Tevin Jenkins gets beat. And I think this is a good time to play here. Bill Lazor said on the coaching show, because I think it's worth talking about, because to me, it goes to the mindset of the coach, the mindset of the play caller. Now, I just read on Twitter that Lazor, Desai, and Tabor, all three coordinators have COVID and are out right now.
So, oh, wow.
Hopefully they're back though. And I know obviously hopefully they're healthy and get well and all that stuff. Yeah. But I want to listen to Bill Lazor here talk about his thought process of calling plays when he's thinking about Tevin Jenkins.
He was put in that position because you guys had him ready and dialed in, ready to go. What are your takeaways and your conversations with a rookie that experienced that kind of baptism in the National Football League?
Well, let's not feel bad for Tevin Jenkins, right? He was a draft pick for a reason, for what we believe in his ability and his proven production on the field. You know, we don't make excuses here, and it's pretty clear with the injury stuff that he's behind the. You know, but behind a little bit as far as, you know, practice reps and that. But that doesn't change the fact that we have really high expectations for him. And if you're suited up on game day, ready to go, then when you step in, we expect you to get the job done. And I don't say that to be mean. I say it because that's the expectations we have of Tevin. And I think that's how Tevin's going to play.
All right, so J-Mac. J-Mac, when you hear that,
oh man,
not shocked they leave him one-on-one anymore, right?
Man,
I'm baffled by that. Like, I'm not saying that to be mean.
Yeah, and I was going
to
say the voice. I'm laughing at the voice. It just goes to show you, you know, their thought process. Obviously, we know Tevin's a great player. Mm-hmm. We know he has the ability. We know you have high expectations. You drafted him in the first round. We know that. Mm-hmm. We know that. We're not asking you that. Mm-mm. We're asking you the why. You talk about the whys all the time, right, brother? The why.
The why you left him one-on-one. We know.
Right? It's a song. Oh, why? Oh, why? Oh, why? Oh, why? Oh, why? Why the hell did you leave him singled up? I don't get it. And then when you chip, right, and you chip, you got Jimmy Graham doing the chipping or the slamming. You know, he's slamming, he's going out to the flat, or he's chipping and then releasing it to his route. Mm-hmm. Jimmy Graham's a wide receiver, man. Mm-hmm. Give me Cole Kmet, another guy you drafted in the first round. Give me Jesse James, a guy that's really going to chip It's an art to chipping a defensive end. You know what I mean? You got to displace that defensive end and put him back on your tackle and then get out of your route. But at the end of the day, if you don't get into your damn route, you want to make sure the protection trumps the route. The protection trumps the route. You want to make sure that we get that man blocked. So Preston Smith, we got to make sure he gets blocked. Mm-hmm. And you're not going to get him blocked by leaving your rookie left tackle coming into his first game on the road in Lambeau Field, coming off of back surgery with a limited amount of practice. It just makes no damn sense.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and here's what bothers me about that statement. First of all, no, we don't feel sorry for Tevin Jenkins. No one's asking you to feel sorry for Tevin right. Jenkins. What we're asking you is because you get paid a lot of money to be the offensive coordinator,
yes.
is to realize that just because someone's suited up, you should know the situation that he is in, that he had back surgery, that he hasn't had a live rep at left tackle since his freshman year in college, right? So when you call plays, like, that right there, to me, the arrogance, yes. the arrogance he had in that state, basically, the play, I'm going to call the plays I want to call. No one's going to feel sorry for you. And you expect you to do your job at a high level, even though he admitted, I know the situation he's in. I know that he hasn't had a rep there. So now, you know, when you say to yourself, man, why would this guy call empty there? Man, why would this guy put Tevin Jenkins one-on-one by the goal line on his first play? Why would this guy put Tevin Jenkins one-on-one second play of the second half and get a sack fumble? Because up there, he's thinking, I don't feel sorry for Tevin Jenkins.
Right.
He's expected. He's suited up. Well, we suited you up. Well, you suited him up, but did you go down there? Did you say, hey, Tevin, when we put you in the game,
right.
how do you feel? Right. How do you feel? Well, how do you feel if I called this play? Because you know what, Blazer? They're paying you $1 million too. So do your job, right? And that nonsense, like that isn't, like, I can't tell you how much my skin crawled
yeah.
when he made those comments, because that kind of arrogance, that kind of ego, That I've dealt with too much in an NFL football building. Like, much is expected of you too, man, because yeah. Like, no one feels sorry for you. I'm not trying to be mean. Like, what are you, like, yeah, do, like you almost want to say, like, do you hear the words right. that are coming yeah. out of your mouth when you say that kind of stuff? And if you're suited up, you're expected to do your job.
Yeah.
At what level? At what level is he expected to do his job? Because last time I checked, Tevin Jenkins is a rookie coming off of back surgery, playing a position that he did rarely played in college, okay? And he was on the road with a silent count. And let me look up real fast, okay? Let me look up real fast. Playing against Preston Smith, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I'm just going to look up real fast, real fast. Just give me a minute here. He has a four-year, $52 million contract. That means he's a pretty good outside linebacker.
Decent,
right? Pretty good, decent outside linebacker. But Laser, what I would like to ask you is, are you not, as the offensive coordinator, expected to know those details about who is on the field and who's going to, but you know what makes it easy on you, J-Mac, when you're off the court, when you just say, well, I don't care who's playing there. They're expected to do their job.
Right.
And listen, I'm not trying to be mean here.
He's putting an emphasis on the play and not the player.
Yes.
And we talked about this a lot, brother. Like it's sometimes, you know, you can have, you know, there's so many offensive coordinators in this league that are innovators and they want to, you know, be the first to do this and they want to change up different schemes and all those different things. But at the end of the day, you got to have the players to execute the scheme. You've got to know the situation with your players in order to execute the scheme or that play that you want to execute so bad. And in this case, it's the fact that, you know, Your OC is putting an emphasis on his play and not his player. So at the end of the day, your play is not going to work because you're putting your rookie left tackle, your player, at a disadvantage mm-hmm. because of his limitations of practice time, mm-hmm. coming off of surgery, going against a vet that's a pretty damn good vet, like you just mentioned, Brother O. So, you know, it's just things like that that's very discouraging, you know, as a former player and as Bear fans like we are, Brother O, that, you know, we have this – quote unquote leadership, you know, running the offense or out there in Hallis Hall. And now you can see why Before this game, we were only averaging 16 points per game. Mm-hmm. And like I said earlier in our pod, if you take away the punt return, mm-hmm. we're and the explosive play by Damir Bird, I mean, what is our average? We're still right there.
Yep.
You know, we consistently can't sustain a drive, and we consistently do something to hurt ourselves, and we consistently don't want to give the running game a chance when you have one of the most dynamic running backs in the league, and you consistently put your rookie quarterback at a disadvantage. And when you hear that quote, it's no wonder we're seeing so many growing pains for Justin Fields, because let's be honest, have they legitimately put together a game plan this year mm-hmm. for Justin Fields to be successful? In yeah. my opinion, I'm going to say hell no.
Hell no. I mean, you give Montgomery the ball once in the second half. How much did they move the pocket during the game with boots and nakeds and things of that nature to get this guy who runs a 4-4, 4-3, 40 out? Anyway, mm-hmm. I feel like J-Mac, I'm tired of saying that. I just want, you almost just to the point like, man, I hope what they call works, you know, yeah. because they're not going to do what you think makes sense. Mm. Here's people keep saying, what do you mean by there needs to be a football guy in the building? There needs to be someone there. When, if you're the football guy in the building, when you hear the offensive coordinator say that, I may fire him that day, J-Man. yeah. Right? I go straight from my office and walk straight to his office. And we're going to have a conversation about what the hell he just said.
Yep.
Right? Because that makes zero sense. Like football people, if you're a football player, if you're a football fanatic, when you hear that, that pisses you off, right?
Yeah.
That pisses you off when someone says,
definitely.
Most people will say, why are you so mad about that? I didn't see the big deal. And he's right. He's right. Kevin Jenkins got to do his job. No. But what you forget is you have a job to do.
Right. And that's to develop your players, mm-hmm. you know, and with that statement right there, it's like you're saying, you know, I don't care about the development of my first round left tackle, mm-hmm. who's supposed to be, you know, hopefully we drafted him with the vision of him being a pillar on the offensive line.
I would like to get Tevin Jenkins on the podcast, and I would like to ask him, has Bill Lazor ever talked to you?
You got
to
get him on.
No, has Bill Lazor ever talked to you about your back injury? Has he ever asked you what percentage your back is at? Has he ever asked you what blocks do you feel like you struggle with in case you do get in the game, right? What kind of football player do you think you go against would give you the biggest trouble? What if I call this play action pass? How much time? How do you feel, right? And because if you didn't, then you're not doing your job either. And listen, hey, Bill, I'm not trying to be mean here, okay? I'm not trying to be mean. Like, who says that kind of stuff?
Right.
This isn't elementary. Don't worry about being mean.
Right.
Say what you mean, and I'll ask you a question about it. You can't be mean to me as long as you're telling me what you think. And we found out now what you think.
Man.
Right? That, as you can tell, J-Mac, when I heard that.
It's embarrassing.
Man, that pissed me off. That really,
yeah.
because that is an example of everything they have wrong. When you watch the film, everything I see wrong is right there in that statement. But I don't want
to. Tough pill to swallow, man. It's a tough pill to swallow for Bears fans. You know, as former players, we share the same sentiment as the fans. We're frustrated. We're pissed off at the way the season has gone. Do we have some bright spots? Yes, we do. You know, I think, you know, another big question here in Chicagoland, brother, that people are asking is, you know, do you still see Justin Fields as a franchise quarterback? And, you know, I'll ask you that question. I know I have my thoughts, but I'll ask you that question. What are your thoughts on Justin Fields still being a franchise quarterback? Do you still think he can achieve that status?
Oh, definitely. I really like the way he competes. By that, I mean, like taking those hits in the first half of the Green Bay game, and he gets up and he's coming after people, man. You can see him at the end of the game. The Bears are down by a bunch of points and he's trying to score touchdowns.
Mm-hmm.
Like he's still in the game, trying to get his team going, trying to get the ball in the end zone, trying to get the onside kick, trying to score again.
Yeah.
To me, that's what a winner looks like, man. And you talked about, a couple times this week on the 500 different shows we've been on. You talked about like when he went to the podium.
Yes.
And took blame and said that we got to get better, right? That he's the first one. He didn't even want to go change into his, he's wanted to get on the podium. The Steelers game. Right, the Steelers game, when he took the team down the field, took the lead late in the game, terrible towels waving. That throw to Damir Bird after he throws the pick six to Rasul Douglas, right? That's to me, that's mental toughness.
Yeah.
To me, that's what winning football looks like. And to me, if they can get better in the building, because we talked about yesterday on the podcast with Hogan Jans. Mm-hmm. I say Hogan's name? It's Hogue. Right?
Hogue, yeah. Hogan Jans.
I always get screwed up. But Hogan Jans, which is a very good
player. It is.
Guys, to our listeners on a no-name football podcast, I'm sure you are, but if you're not, that is a very good podcast. They do tons of Bears information. Me and J-Mac did a cross-talk show with them. Check it out if you have time. But we talked about yesterday, the biggest problem the Bears have, if they've convinced themselves that not having a quarterback is their biggest problem. That is not their biggest problem.
Right.
Their biggest problem is their culture and their standard in their building by the people who run their building. That is their problem. By that, I mean the infrastructure around your quarterback so he can be successful.
Yep.
Right? And that's everything. If your media room, if your lunchroom, if that operates at a low level, that starts to affect everything. It affects if your equipment room, your trainers, your strength staff, all those people have to be operating at a high level for your quarterback to have success.
Yeah. And it's your own worst enemy. You know, you can place the blame on the coach. You can place the blame on the players, but you still got to do what we've been saying all year. Look in the mirror. Mm-hmm. Sometimes you got to take ownership and place the blame on yourself. And, you know, we're talking about Justin Fields and, you know, the franchise quarterback question. And I really believe he is, too, because just like we're talking about, you got to take ownership. He's taking ownership when he's played bad. Mm-hmm. He's taking ownership and he's stepped foot on that podium after every game and he's taking ownership and he continues to say, hey, I got to get better. And that's the beginning. You know, those are signs that you see of a franchise quarterback being able to recognize what he needs to do better as a player that can make his team player, that can elevate the play of his team. You know, we talked about multipliers in this league, Tom Brady being one, Aaron Rodgers being another. You know, that quarterback position, you have to be a multiplier if you want to be, you know, one of the upper echelon teams in this league. And if you don't have that quarterback that's a multiplier, if he's just a guy, well, then guess what? You're not going to be very good. You're going to be average. Because at the end of the day, you know, the parity in the NFL is so spread out. You know, everybody's not going to have the best players in the league, but it's the ones who can, if you're that key player, if you're that quarterback or that leader in that locker room or on that team, if you can elevate the play of an average player and make him a better player than what he is, well, guess what? You have a higher chance of winning more games. And I think that's something that, you know, that I see in Justin Fields. I think he has that ability, but it's tough when you have leadership and you have guys that are in place that is going to continue to set you up for failure and not success. And that's another thing that we haven't seen in Chicago for a long time, Brother O, is development. You know, development. We have not seen the development. Have we hit on some draft picks? Yes. But how many draft picks have we missed on? And it makes you wonder, was it really a miss or were they not developed? Because how many times have we seen, Brother O, and we've seen it, guys here in this organization, right? They may not particularly play well with this organization, but then they leave and then they become a star or they leave and they win a Super Bowl, you know, or they leave and they become a better player. Why? Because they were developed. They were coached up, you know, and that's something that's lacking. And like you said, you need a guy in the building, a football guy that has those qualities that can lead a team and that can pay attention to those details and those details that can lead to a winning culture, a winning organization, you know, and that leads to a winning record of putting a winning product out there at Soldier Field.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Listen, when you talk about that, J-Mac, right? Like people think develop, like, well, what do you mean by developing players? I know we're going down this rabbit hole now, but, that, like we just talked about, the whole building takes a part, and you know, there's a nutritionist there.
Yes.
There's a strength coach there. The coach would be his skill coach, right? So the strength coach is his strength coach.
Yes.
The coach is his skill coach. The nutritionist is helping him take care of his body, right? The guy who cooks lunch and stuff is helping him take care of his body. The equipment guys is helping someone like, David Montgomery tell him like, hey man, look, you should be wearing seven studs here on this. Yes. And anyway, it has everything has to operate a high level for these players to be playing at a high level.
Yep.
Right. So that is what we're talking about when we talk about developing players and how a whole building can affect how this player develops. Because what you see on game day is a product of months and months of work.
Yes.
That's what people, so, and all of that goes in, everybody who touches you, affects how you play, affects how you prepare, who's helping you study film. Tell the video guy, man, I need this to get ready for the game. The video guy doesn't get it to you. Now I'm not ready for the game anymore, right? So all these things matter when you talk about developing players. I know we're over our time here, J-Mac. Anything else you want to talk about? I know they got the 6-7 Vikings this week.
Yeah.
They get a little break from the last two teams they play are combined 20-6, maybe the best two teams in the NFC is something that doesn't get said enough. The Bears with the injuries have had a tough schedule, but talk to me a little bit about what you think about this Vikings matchup.
Yeah, I mean, it's a tough matchup, especially with the way the Vikings run the ball. Obviously, they have Dalvin Cook, who just coming off a 200-yard game. We've been struggling against the run. Minnesota does a good job. They run an outside zone scheme that we talk about a lot. They got some dynamic receivers as well, Justin Jefferson, Adam Thielen. I think Adam Thielen is hurt, so I don't know if he's playing this game, but you got a weapon in Justin Jefferson. It'll be interesting to see what Sean Desai cooks up over there and sees how he tries to play this Minnesota's offense. You know, is he going to, you know, have Jalen Johnson shadow Justin Jefferson? You know, we'll see what pans out. I think a matchup that I want to talk about. And we also have Brandon Thorne coming on here later in the show, but I'll ask him about this matchup as well because he wrote a great article about Robert Quinn. You guys should follow Brandon Thorne on Twitter. His Twitter handle is at Brandon Thorne NFL. But what the key matchup I would like to see is, you know, Christian Darrisaw, the rookie left tackle from Virginia Tech, going against Robert Quinn. You know, I think we have an advantage there. Obviously, Robert Quinn's had a hell of a season. Mm-hmm. I mean, he's getting home, you know, every game he's making an impact play, coming off a season which he only had two sacks. And obviously, we talked about that in the offseason. You know, if we can get Quinn, we talked about if Quinn could get double-digit sacks, imagine having Quinn and Khalil Mack. Well, we don't have Khalil Mack. We just have Quinn now, but he's been playing phenomenal. I think that's a matchup. I think the Bears have an advantage there. And I think it's going to be very instrumental for the Bears to stop the run game because they're going to force feed Dalvin Cook. Alexander Mattison is out this game. I think they brought in Wayne Gallman to back Dalvin Cook up. Mm-hmm. So it's going to be interesting to see if we can stop the run because, you know, Kirk Cousins does a good job of taking care of the ball. He will take his shots to Justin Jefferson and Adam Thielen if Adam Thielen plays. I would like to see us force feed David Montgomery. Mm. Can David Montgomery get a game in which he has 15 plus carries? Please, I'm begging you. What's over and under on DraftKings and FanDuel of David Montgomery getting 15 plus carries?
I give you credit, man. I give you credit.
I'm begging.
Well, since I'm begging, late 2018, right?
I've been saying it,
man.
For how long, brother?
Yeah. The Bears, they've dominated the Vikings since Nagy's been here, right? And it's really been their defensive line who's dominated the Vikings offensive line. So it'll be interesting to see what all, I don't know if Akeem Hicks is up. I hope he is. Yeah. It'd be good to see him back out there again. We know Khalil Mack is already out, but the Vikings offensive line has struggled against the Bears defensive front. Interesting. Clint Kubiak is their new offensive coordinator. Mm-hmm. He does a nice job with that outside zone boot scheme. The Bears have seen it weak, you know, against the San Francisco 49ers, against the Green Bay Packers. They continue to see this scheme. I'm sure Clint Kubiak's studying the second half of the Green Bay Packers game, and you're going to see a lot of those same concepts. Dalvin Cook, man, that guy.
Man, stud.
That guy is a stud, right? Stud. Defensively, Zimmer versus Fields and Lazor and Nagy, those concepts he runs, confusing a young quarterback. He's famous for that. So we will see their two defensive ends are out, though. Daniel Hunter and Everson Griffin have been out. So that'll be good for Tevin Jenkins and Borum or whoever plays there for Borum because Borum has COVID this week. I think he is out. Yeah. I heard Fetty's window is open again. I didn't even know Fetty was still on the team. He may be back. playing this week. So we'll see how the offensive line shakes up. We'll see with the COVID hitting the Chicago Bears. I know they're in enhanced protocols. We'll see who's there on Monday night. Hopefully, a lot of these guys get back. We hope everybody obviously stays healthy. The Bears, the city, everybody could use a win. We don't know what direction the Chicago Bears organization and coaching staff is heading in, but we will see. J-Mac, as usual, it was a blast here on a no-name football podcast, but we'll get to Brandon Thorne. Looking for a taste of the islands? Look no further than No Foods. That's NOH Foods of Hawaii. No Foods was developed to reflect the many international cultures and races of the islands. Hawaiian, Japanese, Chinese, Korean, Portuguese, Filipino, and more. Known for the wide variety of delicious seasoning and sauces. The products of No Foods can make anyone a master chef in their own kitchen. Easy to prepare and delicious in flavor are the hallmarks of No Foods. Again, that's NOH of Hawaii. Dishes like Chinese beef broccoli, Korean barbecue, Filipino adobo, Hawaiian kalua pork, and many, many more. Don't forget about the refreshing and very popular Hawaiian iced tea, sweetened with raw cane sugar and just the right touch of lemon. You can find NOH Foods online at Amazon.com and NOHFoods.com. Also in many stores and supermarkets. As we say in the islands, say yes to no. Aloha. All right, J-Mac, man, we got one of, obviously, my favorite guys here on Twitter. He covers offensive and defensive line play for Trench Warfare Newsletter. He also works with the Bleacher Report, works with Establish the Run, and also is a part of something that's pretty close to my heart, the Joe Moore Award. You know, they award the best offensive line in college. Nobody watches more film on offensive linemen. Nobody watches more film on defensive linemen. And just studying the game in general, wanted to do so. You can find him at Brandon Thorne on NFL. We got Brandon Thorne here on the No Name Football Podcast. Brandon, thank you for joining us, man.
Yeah, absolutely, guys. It's always a pleasure to be with you.
Yeah, thanks for joining us, Brandon. Always enjoy your articles and your insight. Definitely a subscriber, and I recommend everybody out there listening, make sure you follow Brandon Thorne on Twitter at Brandon Thorne NFL. He has his Trench Warfare article that comes out. I think it comes out weekly, right, Brandon?
Yeah, every week.
Yeah, it's definitely a great read. I enjoy it. So we appreciate you contributing with that. I want to ask you first and foremost about Jason Peters. Obviously, left the game last week, I think, with an ankle injury. Talk about his play this year. I mean, the guy is 40 years old, and he comes out of retirement to play left tackle for the Bears. And, you know, me and Brother Earl, we were saying when they first signed him, like, man, how much is he going to give you at 40? You know, does he have the ability to hold up? We know he was a great player in the past, but obviously when you're in the trenches like that for majority of your career playing at a high level, it's the sustainability aspect that we look at. And he's definitely, you know, gone way and above expectations. What is your thoughts on Jason Peters' play thus far this season?
Man, I think you started to allude to it there a little bit. I mean, it's just been really impressive. You know, I had my doubts even. You know, I've watched him a lot over the last 5-6 years, you know, in Philly, and always just been such a big fan of his game. He's pretty unique. You know, there's not a lot of left tackles that are, you know, built like him. You know, 6'4", you know, he's listed as 6'4", 330, but, you know, he's probably clearly heavier than that. But he's just such a freak athlete. I mean, truly one of the most special athletes, I think, in the game. And that's been a big reason why he's been able to sustain, you know, such a high level of play at this point in his career. I mean, like you said, to come in late, you know, I think it's late August or whatever, he got signed, you know, basically off his couch. I'm sure he was preparing and everything like that. But you know, to perform how he has is just, it's so impressive. I mean, 13 starts, you know, he's played 90% of his snaps. I mean, my biggest concern was just kind of getting dinged up and then, you know, getting hurt, because that was kind of how his Philly career ended. He just kept getting, you know, these injuries were accumulating. But maybe, you know, the time off and, you know, missing a good chunk of camp and stuff like that, you know, helped him. But I mean, just the way he moves at his size, it's still just like, it's pretty eye catching. I mean, he's very fluid. He's, you know, granted, not what he once was, but considering his age and everything that we just said, I think it's still pretty impressive. Yeah, I mean, he's a bulldozer in the run game. You know, he anchors well in pass protection, and he's pretty reliable still at this point in his career. I mean, he's probably going to be a Hall of Famer. You know, I think he's a 9-time Pro Bowler, 6 or 7 All Pros, All Decades team. You know, so for him to just be doing this at the end of his career, I think is just a nice cherry on top of what really should be a Hall of Fame career.
Yeah, there's no doubt that this guy is a Hall of Famer. I think what he's brought to the Chicago Bears this year, Brandon, I mean, when they had really no plan at left tackle and got lucky to go out there and get a guy who's a professional, man. I mean, he came in here and gave you, and not only that, but you can tell, like, he is taking pride in being a mentor to the younger offensive linemen. I just think that, you know, I couldn't agree with you more, man. I think he's been impressive this year. I had him, honestly, and I hope I don't see him because as big as he is, I call him sir. But I had him playing 5 or 6 games, right? I had him playing 5 or 6 at the most games, right? I think I said that out loud. He's probably heard me say it, so I'll duck behind a corner when I see him. But Brandon, I want to go to a young guy who got, when Jason Peters went down, he got playing time, finally went in after recovering from back surgery. We know that was a long rehab for him. Credit to him for working that hard to get back to play this year. I know we had you on our podcast twice already talking about how high you were on Tevin Jenkins coming out of the draft. Just talk to us. I know you've studied him. Talk to us about, and our fans listening to this podcast, talk to us about what you've seen from him this past week and what he needs to improve on.
Yeah, so I just went through the game and kind of charted a lot of it, you know, wrote down some notes for a lot of what was going on. And I think it's important to kind of lay out the circumstances like you did a little bit there with the back surgery, you know, being a rookie, first appearance as a pro on the road in Green Bay, you know, filling in, you know, unexpectedly, you know, for Peters after 13 snaps when he got hurt. So like all that said, you know, I think that kind of provides him a little bit of a cushion here and a little bit of a runway, you know, to get better. But you know, it even with that said, when you're looking just at the film, I think, it was a pretty rough game for him. I mean, honestly, I thought he was struggling with a bunch of different stuff with his technique. I mean, granted, he's going against Preston Smith, who is an underrated pass rusher in the NFL. I mean, he's long, he's crafty. He has a bunch of different ways to beat you. You know, he showed it against Jenkins in this game. He was setting him up early with the bull rush, you know, on the first 2 pass pro reps. I mean, he was just going straight down the middle of Jenkins. And you know, Jenkins held up okay. The second one, you know, Jenkins was holding on too long, like deep in the pocket. Fields already had, you know, broken the pocket to the right. This was near the end zone or the red zone, excuse me. And, you know, he could have gotten called for another holding penalty on that one, but he didn't. But anyway, you know, Preston was setting him up with power. And then the third pass pro rep, Preston goes inside club swim, and Jenkins looked like he was just expecting power. And he went to like grab him, you know, with 2 hands, mm-hmm. and he just kind of opened up that inside shoulder, you know, and kind of turned towards him a little bit, expecting the bull rush, and just got beat clean inside. So that was like the first, you know, his first exposure right there, you know, just power inside club swim, and 2 of those 3 reps were kind of shaky. And then from there, I mean, it was so much went on. You know, as far as one thing that I found questionable was Chicago putting him out wide at like receiver. You know, I know they did that twice, you know, where that like bunch look, I mean that, you know, I just kind of asked myself why, you know, especially on the one where he got a holding call on the corner, you know, he's blocking for a receiver screen to the left. And I mean, he's in a wide receiver stance, you know, and it's just like, you know, I don't know. It just seems like maybe I'm too cute sometimes with some stuff they do. So that was kind of weird, you know, to me. I know they've done that in the past too. But, you know, to get back to him more so in pass protection, like, I just thought that he was reaching a little bit too much for Preston on contact. There was the pick six play where you could see that happen. It worked okay, but I think that process, you know, is not good. It's how he lost that on that inside club swim earlier, you know, just kind of reaching for Preston instead of being a little bit more patient, more striking. And then, you know, it just seemed like he was a little unsure of his technique early on. And then there was a third and four, the long touchdown pass. I think it was third quarter, maybe second. Preston went bull rush, and there was a running back chip to the outside. Jenkins reached again with two hands, but he was able to reset and anchor on that one. I will say it was nice how they provided him with some chip help here and there. Granted, it didn't always work out how it was expected to, but at least they were, you know, providing him some help because he was on an island in this game quite a bit as well. And Preston lines up in a super wide nine. So that's tough in of itself for any tackle, let alone in, you know, your first start having to get to your landmark against that. You know, that's really tough. And Preston was in that wide nine the whole game. There was a couple times where he was like, you know, there was one time where he underset, I think. He needed to keep kicking, like take another step versus Preston in a wide nine. He was attacking the corner, and he went to go get him early. He got his outside hand swiped, lost the corner at 8 yards. You know, Fields was able to step up and get a big gain with his leg, so it didn't matter. But, you know, Fields bailed him out on that one. Preston got him with, like, this really, probably the best move of the game, of second and five in the third quarter. Preston set him up with this, like, long arm. He was coming at him with a long arm, and then all of a sudden just dipped his shoulder and fell off the corner. Got him for a strip sack and the holding call on Jenkins. That was a filthy move from Preston. You know, and I mean, on that play, he had a tight end chip. I think it was Jimmy Graham, and it was play action. I thought he needed to get just more vertical in his set. He opened up his hips a little too early and just created that soft edge and, you know, kind of helped Preston on that one. That's another thing I noticed watching, you know, Chicago tackles, their vertical setting, you know, pretty consistently, which is interesting because I didn't really see Jenkins do that a whole lot at Oklahoma State. He was more so like setting at 45. So that's kind of interesting. I think it could work well for him, but I'm sure it's an adjustment. Another thing I saw from him that was kind of concerning was just, you know, getting the snap count down. I know he's on the road in Lambeau, all that stuff, but you could see him on a couple times just kind of like bailing out of his stance a little early, rocking back in his stance a little early, and then his head inside watching the ball to get off, you know, and rather than keep your eyes on the opponent, you know, his eyes are inside looking at the ball. I felt like that got him in trouble on one rep where he got beat inside. He was just kind of late getting in position because he had to turn his head and turn his whole body. And then by the time he turned his whole body, Preston was already crossing the space inside. Like, I think snap timing, you know, and just kind of learning cadence and all that type of stuff, you know, will hopefully come, you know, with more practice, you know, with the ones and things like that, assuming he gets it. But, I mean, I have a lot more notes here on, like, probably 10 more plays, but I think it's all kind of, you know, it all kind of has what I'm talking about kind of sprinkled in there.
Hey, Brandon, give us three or four of those 10 plays that you think is most important that maybe you think, okay, Tevin Jenkins is at practice this week. Brandon Thorne shows up. You say, Tevin, I want you to work on these two or three things this week. I want you to just get better at this, and this will improve your game the most.
I mean, I think the first thing is getting the cadence and the snap count down, like down pat, so you can really get out of your stance first. Mm-hmm. I mean, that I think that's critical for tackles, and you see the best tackles in the game. I mean, it's all about how you start, you know.
And he has an example right there in front of him, right? He's got an example. Peters is probably telling him. And, you know, the hard thing, like you're talking about, okay, man, we're going to move you to left tackle. Like you said, the situation is important. Hell yes, it is. We're going to move you to left tackle, okay? Mm-hmm. And then your first reps are going to be on the road, silent count versus Preston Smith. So, yes, you need to work on getting off on silent count.
Right. Yes. Yeah, absolutely. That's huge because if you're just a tick late out of your stance and that pass rusher, you know, gets you initially, I mean, that can be the difference between a win and a loss, you know, in the NFL, and it oftentimes is. So I think that's huge. I mean, if he can get out of his stance first, you know, really fire out and then get into his set and get to his spots consistently and beat guys to the spot, especially as a vertical setter like that, you know, which I'm sure they're being coached to do. You know, if he's getting to his spot first and with his vertical set and he's not opening up his hips too early, he's a big dude. I mean, you know, if you're forcing guys to run through you, I think that's how you want to play. You know, especially for him. And I think vertical setting, you know, for that reason, it fits Peters well, it fits Borum well and Jenkins well, because I mean, the idea with the vertical set, from what I understand, is, you know, you're trying to get to a spot and make a guy run through you. And I think that's how Jenkins should want to play. So in order to do that, I think like not opening up his hips too early, especially versus those super wide nine techniques. I mean, it's tough. It's easier said than done, obviously, if you're having to get to a spot versus a guy that's, you know, super far outside of you. Naturally, you want to turn towards them. But when you do that, you create two-way goes. So just staying a little bit more square, a little bit longer. And the hand thing, I mean, not catching as much, you know, and rather just, I think he needs to be a little bit more just variance, you know, variance to his strikes, as opposed to just going to catch guys or reaching, more striking, more, independent hands would be nice to see, as opposed to two hand strikes is dangerous, you know, at tackle, because the margin for error is so slim. You know, if you miss, it's over. Independent hands allows you to kind of, you know, just play with more balance and control, I think. So those would be things that I think that he can do to improve his play. That's what I would say. Mm-hmm.
Brandon, I want to go on the other side of the ball, and you analyze a lot of pass rushers throughout the league, and you have the term true sack rate. Can you tell our listeners the definition of true sack rate? And the second part of my question is, where does Robert Quinn rank on that list amongst your true sack rate?
Yeah, so the true sack rate, the whole idea is to basically bring more value to the sack statistic, because I think when we look at sacks, you know, we could, you know, if you're trying to evaluate a player's season and you're looking just at sacks, I think it could kind of steer you in the wrong direction sometimes, because, you know, I've watched every sack so far in the NFL the last 2 years charting this. So literally over 1,000, and you see a lot of sacks where guy is unblocked or the quarterback just holds the ball way too long because the coverage is really good or he's not seeing it. And then, you know, the pass rusher gets a sack, or, you know, a teammate gets a great rush, but the quarterback gets off of it and the other teammate just cleans it up. You know, so all those type of sacks to me are more low quality. So that's how I grade them. I give them like a 0.5 on a number scale. And then if a guy wins where he's straight up beating a guy one-on-one and the quarterback's back foot just hits and he's, you know, just maybe taking one hitch and boom, he sacked, that is a high quality sack. So when you know, my idea was to do that for every pass rusher in the NFL, and you put it on paper and you know, put it in a spreadsheet and allow it to kind of, you know, build a formula off of it, you can get a better idea of who's actually earning their sacks. And this year, Robert Quinn is actually, after 14 weeks, he's first in the NFL, with a score of 12.5 and something I call the sack score. So that basically tallies up high quality, low quality. And also I get points for forced fumbles, strip sacks, which Quinn has two of. And I also track like how many snaps they play. So then we can see how many sacks are they getting per snap? How many high quality sacks are they getting per snap? Things like that. But yeah, I mean, Quinn's always been kind of in the top five the whole year. But just the last few weeks, man, I mean, you know, he's just steadily producing sacks, and it's incredible. You know, I wrote that article on him, and I mean, I wanted to do that before he was in first place, obviously, you know, just cause he was, I think at the time, third or fourth when I wrote the article. But I just thought the year he was having deserved some recognition, because last year obviously was a disappointment. And I think a lot of fans thought that he was washed up. And then now here he is, almost 32 years old. And he's, you know, I mean, he's in my, you know, based on the true sack rate, he's the most effective pass rusher in the NFL in terms of sacks. So just a remarkable turnaround from him, and the way he's winning, man. I mean, to be 32 and to have the get off that he has, and then the bend, I mean, it's just insane. Like, the way that he can bend the corner is just, it's just wild. I mean, it's on par with like Myles Garrett, Von Miller, guys like that. And he can also win inside. He can cross the guy's face, because when you have to defend that outside edge as a tackle against Quinn, you know, naturally you're going to open up early and then he'll just cross your face. So he has multiple ways of winning, and he's just a lot of fun to watch. I mean, he's a guy that like I followed since I was, you know, young, like when he was coming out of North Carolina. I remember he was such a freak, and I wasn't sure if he was ever going to regain this, you know, because he had back injuries and stuff when he was with St. Louis back in the day. But yeah, it's just, it's amazing. So I think he's having a great season. I think he should be in consideration for all pro, worst case Pro Bowl, but I mean, I think he's having that good of a season.
Man, and the guy runs on his ankles.
Yeah.
Right? He's like Gumby, man. It's crazy. Yeah. Like, there was a picture of him on one of his sacks last week. I would have blew every ligament in my ankle and my knee in the position that his body was in. But you're right, man. And what a good example, Brandon, for the fans of a guy who struggled, I think, with a back injury last year, but has come back this year. Kind of like, you know, I'm thinking about Tevin Jenkins right off the bat, right? Sometimes some years are just tougher because of injury. So you don't want to write guys off just because they look bad in one year. They can work at it. They can get better. They can get stronger and come back, especially a young player. Like, I know a lot of people are like, you know, move Tevin Jenkins. He's not ready for that. Give him some time. Let him grow. Let him play there. Protect him with the play calling. Brandon, you asked earlier why the Chicago Bears would run that formation they ran. If you watch a lot of Chicago Bears film, you'll ask that every damn series they run. So yeah. don't worry yourself asking. Me and J-Mac is giving up asking why. Other guy I know, Brandon, that you've studied a little bit, and I want to hear your thoughts on him, is Cody Whitehair, the Bears left guard. I want to hear how you think he's developing, because I think one of the problems the Bears have is they don't have a lineman who plays at an all-pro level, and they need that badly.
Yeah. I mean, Whitehair, I think, first of all, you just have to talk about how consistent he is. You know, he's always available. I mean, I think he's, 6 years in, and he's missed 4 or 5 games. So that right there is just kind of a testament to his, you know, toughness, durability, you know, maybe a little luck in there as well. But still, I mean, I think a lot of that is a credit to him. So that's, you know, I think invaluable as an offensive lineman, right? If you have a guy who you know is going to be out there every play, you know, that's already, you know, better than a lot of other starters in the NFL. But then when you watch him, you know, I think position versatility is another thing. You know, he could play center, either guard spot, and he has played center in both guard spots for Chicago in his career. That's another kind of thing in his back pocket that he has. But, you know, he's just a guy, I think, who plays pretty technically sound, you know, fundamentally sound. He gets good fits in the run game. You know, he's pretty good with his hands. You know, I think he's maybe a little, you know, on the play strength side, you know, can be, I'd probably qualify it as like maybe average, you know, maybe a little below average sometimes. I mean, there's certain guys who give him a lot of trouble, like Kenny Clark, you know, the guy in division who just, Kenny Clark is, you know, in my opinion, one of the 3 or 4 best nose tackles in the game. So, you know, struggling with him, you know, most guys do. But you know, there's some other guys like Cam Hayward, you know, I mean, guys like that, like the elite interior guys, you know, can get inside of him and really gain control of his frame and, you know, kind of push him around a little bit in pass protection. His anchor's a little shaky sometimes, you know, against those, you know, that caliber of opponent. But I think snap in, snap out, you know, week in, week out, he's a guy who's, you know, a solid starter, you know, who can do everything for you, execute kind of any concept in the run game, you know, moves pretty well. You know, just one of those guys who's easy for fans to like criticize and easy to not appreciate. But, you know, I think when a guy like that is gone and you have more of a revolving door at the position, then you appreciate guys like that. But, yeah, I'm a fan. I've liked him for a while. He's fun to watch.
Brandon, Bears, Vikings, Monday Night Football. I want to talk about the matchup. You got a young tackle in Christian Darrisaw, a rookie out of V-Tech, a guy who I'm sure you studied coming out in the draft last year. I know he's banged up, I think, with an ankle injury, but he gets to face off against a Robert Quinn, who you've just been talking about. What are your thoughts on that matchup?
Yeah, Yeah, that's, I mean, honestly, it's a bad matchup for Darrisaw. it's tough. Darrisaw's more of a, you know, he's a really big tackle, kind of like Jenkins, in, you know, in terms of their size. And, you know, he's a guy who wants to play a power rusher, ideally. A guy who's, you know, has elite speed and bend around the corner is exactly like the worst matchup that you can draw up for him. So the nice thing about Minnesota's offense is, like, they're very good about, I mean, Kirk Cousins is very good about getting the ball out quick. You know, as soon as his back foot hits, ball is gone pretty much every time. And they're heavy play action, heavy run game, all that type of stuff. So the infrastructure around Darrisaw will help him. But, man, if they get down or they get an obvious drop back pass situation, 3rd and 7+, that's, he's going to need help, you know, against Quinn. So that'll be a really interesting one to watch. And just to circle back a little bit on Jenkins, I mean, I'm looking at the Bears' schedule the rest of the year, and I think Jenkins has a very favorable, you know, set of matchups here in the next 4 games of the year to close it out. So I think that's kind of encouraging. Just looking at the pass rushers he's going to face, or lack thereof. I mean, the fact that the Vikings, both their starting defensive ends are out, you know, Everson Griffin, Danielle Hunter. So that's obviously helpful. He's facing backups basically in this game. Now granted, you know, some of these guys are promising, like DJ Wonnum is one of the ends that he'll probably see a lot. They've been playing Sheldon Richardson, a defensive end, who's normally a defensive tackle. He can give him some trouble, Jenkins, that is, because, I mean, Sheldon Richardson, even though he's normally a defensive tackle, he gave Trent Williams some trouble a couple weeks ago, and I think he's the best left tackle in the game. So that actually is going to be, you know, kind of a easy-to-overlook matchup there, him and, against Richardson, who's really crafty with his hands despite being a defensive tackle. So that'll be a really interesting one to watch. But then Seattle and the Giants before the Vikings again. I mean, the Giants have a really good rookie, Azeez Ojulari, but he primarily plays over the right tackle. But I'm sure he'll see him a little bit. Seattle, you know, I mean, these are just kind of like below average defensive lines, you know, who are more strong inside, especially the Giants. So it's not like he's facing their murderer's row of, like, you know, like Watts, Bosa's, you know, guys like that. He's not facing elite guys, at least. So, you know, just kind of encouraging, you know, for him, you know, to build confidence and, you know, things like that. But not that it would be easy, but, you know, it could be a lot worse for Jenkins the last 4 games of the year if that's how long he plays.
Well, Brandon, man, thanks for joining us here on the No Name Football Podcast. As usual, almost too much information. You make our head explode. All great information, man. Like we talked about, check him out in the Trench Warfare. Brandon, I wanted to tell you that I'm going to call, I'm sure you know the name, Bob Wiley. He started the Cool Clinic years ago, and he started the Mushroom Society, and he said that the mushroom logo signifies the similarity between the O-line coach and the fungus. Both are kept in the dark and fed garbage, yet continue to flourish. So you we're going to get you, we got to make you part of that society. So I got to give him a call, man. All the work you put in on offensive line play, you become one of us.
I appreciate that, man. Thank you.
Thanks, Brandon. Thanks, have Brandon. A good day.
All right, you too.
Hey guys, it's Olin Krutz, and I want to tell you about Tequila Embajador, the official tequila of the No Name Podcast. Whether it's celebrating a big win or just kicking back after work, adding Tequila Embajador takes every gathering to the next level. The care, quality, and patience put into each and every bottle of Tequila Embajador can be tasted from the first sip to the last. And it's why we're honored to call them our teammates. Go to their website, EmbajadorTequila.com, and use the code KICKOFF10 and receive your discount on your next purchase of Tequila Embajador, the official tequila of the No Name Podcast.
Well, that does it for our show today on the No Name Football Podcast. We thank all of our listeners for listening and supporting us on all the social media platforms. Make sure you download our podcast. We're on all the platforms, Spotify, iTunes, whatever your choice is, make sure you download it. Make sure you tell your friends and family. Give us a rating if you like. Hopefully it's a 5-star rating, but if not, give us a rating anyway. We liked your feedback and criticism, that things we can improve on upon our show. But before we go, as usual, we the one that makes play. Man, I want to suit up right now. In the words of the great Mike Brown, you guys keep making plays in life, and we'll keep making these great podcasts for you. We're out, and we'll see you next time, Chicago. Take care. God bless.
Mahalo.